Hi, I'm Steve Goldstein, and this is the Friday Newscap podcast. Each week, we review the biggest stories with experts, reporters, and commentators to put the news in perspective. Here's this week's episode.
Whatever we pass has to pass with 60 votes, and that means we've got to have a bipartisan bill.
I hope that my colleagues will hear what the will of the American people. They don't want a tax giveaway to billionaires and corporations at the expense of the middle class. Plain and simple, this bill is not fair to the vast, vast majority of the American people. It's a vehicle to get things done that normally would not pass through the regular process in Congress.
Does it grow the economy? Does it expand opportunity? Does it expand compensation, you know, salaries and payrolls for people over the next decade?
A great way to honor one of our greatest citizens who has committed his lifetime to service to the citizens of Arizona, to the citizens of the country, and to the people of this globe.
And joining us to talk about a lot of stuff this week, including Jeff Flake's DACA deal and a new entrant in the race to succeed Trent Franks, are Marcus Dell'Artino, partner at First Strategic, and Lawrence Robinson, governing board member with the Roosevelt School District. Guys, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
All right, Lawrence, let me start with you on this Jeff Flake sort of voting for tax reform in exchange for DACA sort of thing. Do you think that Flake has any juice left at this point to try to get to help in assisting a DACA deal getting done? And then does this in any way possibly lead to discussion about comprehensive immigration reform?
Well, you know, I think that Jeff Flake is someone who I do appreciate from time to time. I'm one of those Democrats who I guess would call themselves a Flake Democrat. But I think he really has postured here more than produced. And I think that you can look only to the fact that he could go down onto the Senate floor and ask for consent to consider DACA. But he's not going to, because I think at this point, even for Jeff Flake, Republican unity means more than the policy and the kids that DACA affects.
Marcus, what do you think?
I thought it was genius. I mean, the guy's got nothing to lose, right? And there's nothing more dangerous than a politician who's got nothing to lose. You know, I think it was a great negotiation. I think that the White House actually does want to accomplish DACA. Quietly, they've sent those signals over to the Senate. And I think that Republicans are eager to work on this, but more eager to sort of finally take this issue off the table.
When Mitch McConnell says, though, the president has given us until March, what does that say to you?
That he's given them till March.
Yeah, and it says they go to their tried and true method that they've used cycle over cycle, which is red meat to their base. And DACA does not play well in the Republican base, even for those who are retiring. And so, you know, he could have called for an up or down vote on the Senate floor. He could have really had that Mr. Smith goes to Washington moment, and he's not doing it. And by March, we'll be in a new territory, and DACA, I don't think, will pass.
I don't – but the problem is that's not Jeff Flake's –
sure.
Sort of MO, right? I'm not going to go to the floor and call for an up or down vote, especially when I don't think I'm going to win. So I think he's going to spend this time negotiating a deal, possibly bipartisan, doubtful in this environment, but a deal that brings the votes to the table. And I think that that'll end up being his legacy if he can accomplish it.
When you talk about bringing votes, though, you also have to consider the House here, which is a totally different animal than the Senate.
Yeah.
I mean, is it possible that the House and Senate can come together on something that will be palatable to the kids that are really affected by this?
You know, you hit the nail on the head. The tough part's going to be the House. There's no doubt about it. And even if I think Jeff Flake will be worn out just getting the votes in the Senate, much less moving to the House. But Paul Ryan, I think, has some eagerness to sort of get this deal accomplished. And Lawrence is right, no doubt about it. I mean, this is not very popular with the red meat base. But the fact of the matter is we've been talking about it for how long? I mean, I feel like it's the issue that just keeps on giving. And I think that there is eagerness to put it behind us and finally solve a problem. And frankly, if they do, Republicans will be in a far better spot than they are sitting right now in a generic ballot.
Yeah, I mean, this is really an issue that's unfortunate. These kids are American, but for the piece of paper. We've invested all of our resources in educating them, protecting them. They know no other place but our country. And if the Family Values Party can't find a consensus to protect these American kids, then I don't know what they stand for. But the problem here, look, is really simple. I think that, you know, Marcus is right that Paul Ryan wants to move this, and Republicans would be smart to do it. But I don't think I'll have capital left to do it by that point. We may not have a budget. We may have some other issues that are looming. with a tax issue. And I think DACA's too far down his agenda, and I don't think it's going to pass, unfortunately.
Well, but let's keep in mind it's also the White House's issue. And I think that's going to be a driving force to get members of Congress. He hasn't been shy about kicking members in the Congress in the rear end, so I think that we can see that happen.
When you look at the list of issues that Congress, there was some thought maybe they would take up before the new year. They're not going to. You talk about DACA, CHIP, the health insurance program for kids, maybe actually a budget. Where, I mean, does DACA outside of a place like Arizona, does DACA still have the import among the rest of members of Congress to compete with some of those other issues?
I think it does. It's become a national issue. It's closer to home, of course, for us here in Arizona or Texas or even California. But it's undoubtedly become a national issue. And the proof positive. Watch it on CNN or Fox News or whatever brand of news your flavor of the day is. And I think that poll after poll, frankly, has shown that the majority of Americans want a solution to this problem.
I was going to an event in Tubac last week with a friend, and we were going to do some work down there while I was at the conference. And we had to turn around after Tucson because I remembered that there was an immigration checkpoint. And because he falls within the gap of DACA, he is not renewed. And it cuts so close to home here, but I think the party is just so out of touch. They're going to be too focused on dismantling Social Security and the safety net to save these kids.
One final question on DACA, Lawrence. First to you, if in fact something gets done by March, let's say, does it matter whether the motivation is actual sympathy for these kids or whether it's an economic driver, a political driver? If it gets done, does the motive matter?
Not to me.
Marcus, what do you think?
I don't think so. I think the Americans are just ready. They're ready for a solution on this. And so whatever the motivation, everybody, you know, political parties are going to posture and spin like they do on every issue. And that's certainly, this is going to be absolutely no different. But at the end of the day, I think everybody's going to be feeling good that a solution was reached.
And speaking of posturing, there have been people that Governor Doug Ducey commented on this week who are posturing to succeed Senator John McCain, and Governor Ducey called out their character. Marcus, were you surprised he'd come out that strongly? And how many people do you think have lobbied the governor at this point?
Well, let me take the first question first. I wasn't surprised at all. And as a matter of fact, I was proud of him, would be the best way to put it. I thought it was a classy maneuver that basically said, listen, you know, we're going to conduct this thing with class. Number one, John McCain's not going anywhere anytime soon. And he's a friend of mine, and I want to focus on him getting better. Obviously everybody knows that means a lot to me in a different sort of context. With that said, I think that there's been a number of people that have quietly been lobbying behind the scenes, and I think that gave them great pause, and certainly other candidates great pause to shut up.
Lawrence, what does that indicate? Because politics can be really, really rough and dirty, and none of us would be surprised if people were lobbying the governor. What do you think about the whole reaction there?
I mean, imagine that people are going into the public square using power to try to move up the ladder in politics. I mean, it's curious to me that the governor is the one calling this out. But I do agree with Marcus. I think John McCain's an American hero. And I think that we deserve in this state to give him that respect and to give him the seat that he has earned and to allow him to serve as long as he seems fit to serve. And I also think that the Republican Party, while looking at the insider baseball here, is missing the point that the generic Democratic candidate and Kyrsten Sinema, with a name on the other side, the other Senate seat, are up big. And so if the Republicans want to talk about jockeying and putting people back into order, they're really missing the point about, you know, trying to take away health care and trying to give tax cuts to the rich. That is really resonating out there, not who's lining up to try to take the Republican mantle for the seat.
Marcus, do you think that, in fact, those folks who had been lobbying quietly the governor's office, do you think they really are out now, or do you think there's still a chance?
He had a pretty strong statement, and I'll tell you, I will go public with this and tell you what I think drove it. And that was some scumbag, for lack of a better term, was calling newsrooms last week reporting that John had passed away. And it was a classless maneuver, and it was disgusting behavior. And most of the people in politics knew it was happening. And of course, those rumors were not true. The governor was frustrated by it, irritated by it, thought it was a classless maneuver, and called it out. And I appreciate it. I think it's time to to try and, regardless of what your position is on the issue or what party, it's time to bring some class back to politics. And I think that's what he was trying to accomplish.
One more real quick Senate-related question, guys, before we go to break here. And that has to do with the Republican side in the race to succeed Jeff Flake. Is Martha McSally actually going to run for this seat? What do you guys think?
You know, my indications, I guess my intel would say she is going to run. She's putting a bunch of pieces into place as we speak. I know that she's interviewing and talking to people, so I think that she will pull the trigger. I know that there's a couple things she wants to get done before she does that, but I fully expect her to get into the race.
What do you think, Liz?
You know, it's funny to talk about Republican discipline with candidates in the Democratic Party. We have no discipline or order. So it's fascinating to hear this this order that can be mandated. But look, McSally, when she leaves that district, leaves a Democratic pickup in Southern Arizona. Either Ann Kirkpatrick or Matt Hines would be very strong candidates. And I think that that's what is giving McSally pause. And so the D.C. faction versus the Arizona faction and the infighting going on is going to be a fun race to watch in the backdrop of everything else going on in 2018.
That's Lawrence Robinson. Also here is Marcus Dell'Artino. I'm Steve Goldstein with Mark Brody. More of the NewsCap still to come. Good Friday morning. It's the show on 91.5 KJZZ here in Phoenix with Mark Brody. I'm Steve Goldstein. We're in the midst of our Friday NewsCap with Lawrence Robinson and Marcus Dell'Artino.
So, guys, we were talking about some potential congressional races before the break. Let's talk about one that is happening sooner than the rest, which is the special election for CD8 in the West Valley. That's Trent Frank's district. This week, we learned that another state lawmaker is going to be running for that, State Senator Debbie Lesko. Marcus, she was in line to potentially be the next Senate president in the after the next round of elections. Are you in any way surprised that she's taking this step at this point?
No, I'm not surprised, frankly, at all, and fully expect her to get in. She's, you know, Debbie Lesko is probably one of the hardest workers down there. She does have a reputation, and it's well-earned, of taking on the hardest issues that, frankly, most people don't want to work on. Who wants to work on pension reform? I mean, you have to be, you know, nuts to do that. And she dives in and takes those hard issues on. And so I'm not shocked. But more importantly, remember that there is enough time, and I expect this will probably be the next component, for her to run for Congress and then go ahead and run again for her state Senate seat. So that does not necessarily take her out of line to be president of the Senate. It does raise somewhat of a question. I'm not too sure we have the answer on this yet, but does it restart your term limits? And I think we're still waiting on what the answer to that might be. I'm not too sure.
How do you see that now that she has entered that primary? How much does that change the dynamic of what that primary was looking like, let's say, last week?
Her strong part of her district is Sun City. It's her bread and butter, and they love her out there. And so to that end, I think it does, it definitely makes the race more competitive. I mean, those people are going to vote. You know it. You can bet on it. And they're, you know, right now they're her voters. So, you know, it's going to be a competitive race. The question that's left out there is this Trump factor. And does Phil Lovis close in on that endorsement, number one? Number two, does somebody else join the race? And what does Governor Brewer do? I mean, don't forget, Governor Brewer is West Valley and also has a pipeline to the White House and right in Trump's ear. So you could set up a scenario where you have Jeff DeWitt whispering in one ear of the president and Jim Brewer whispering in the other ear of the president. So it's a fast race. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch.
Lawrence, what do you think?
I think everything is up for grabs in 2018. We haven't talked about Alabama, and we probably are all out-talked about Alabama. But, you know, there are races that would be closer by voter registration here in Arizona than the Alabama Senate race was. And, you know, I'm not saying the Democrats are going to take District 8, but I think that you've got to look at the potential for just rewriting the entire political script in 2018. I don't think we know what's going to happen.
So you think it's worth the effort, so Democrats shouldn't put money elsewhere?
I think it's worth the effort, and I think that the Republican base will be demoralized. And I think that you look at the one piece of legislation they're going to run on, and it's a very unpopular tax bill. And I think all of those things considered, plus the fact that we've got great Democratic top-of-the-ticket candidates for once in a blue moon sort of a picture here in Arizona, maybe, you know, two Senate seats, you've got a lot of potential to rock these congressional races.
I would I will be the first to say that there's an issue, but I don't think it'll happen in CD8, let me tell you. I don't think the Democrats are going to walk away with that one. But I will caution my Republican friends, and that is when you look at what's going on in these recent elections across the country, whether it was Virginia or some of the other states that held midterms, the problem is consistent, and that is Republican women are not voting. It's not that they're voting for the other candidate. They're not showing up. And so Republicans this cycle in Arizona need to be focused on that problem and figure out how we're going to turn out Republican women to vote.
Marcus, finally on this one, there are so many different shoes that could drop. We don't know. But one of the candidates, of course, is Steve Montenegro in that district. At this point, the Trent Franks endorsement, good, bad, indifferent. How do Republicans in the West Valley see that?
You know, I think it's actually good, and I think social media is sort of the key, but boy, his followers are very loyal to Congressman Franks, and they were sad that he had to resign, and they were upset. And, you know, again, going back to that point, it's a short election. Trent Franks starts sending out emails to the base. You know, that helps Montenegro with fundraising. You know, I think he's a strong candidate. I think Lovis is a strong candidate. He's done a lot for the Trump. He's already, his wife's a leading fundraiser, if not the leading fundraiser in Arizona. He's got access to lists and money. So there's a lot to be done in this race in a short amount of time.
Guys, let's move from the political field to another playing field, in this case, ice. And in the sense that the, you like that segue? The Coyotes and Glendale are sticking together for at least one more year. Is this, I mean, given all the bad blood between these two entities, I mean, how is this actually going to work? And the Coyotes this year obviously are not very good, you know, record-wise. They're obviously not going to go to the playoffs in all likelihood this year. How does this work with a team that doesn't really want to be there in a city that may or may not actually want them there?
Well, you know, a lot of things are changing in that dynamic from last year. And I will tell you, the city manager out there in Glendale has worked overtime in coming to a solution. Remember that the Glendale's ownership package has also changed and is a little bit more friendly. They have one of the best deals in Major League Hockey out in Glendale, and they know it. The facility is successful. If you look at the concerts, the non-hockey events that they bring in, they're having a record year out at that stadium. So it's not a location problem. It's a product problem. And I think that, you know, Glendale certainly wants to work overtime to keep them. And I expect a solution to come. I don't know what that solution is going to look like. But keep in mind that the Coyotes have to put a better product on. At the end of the day, this is a product problem, and the Coyotes have to perform to get that hometown base excited about it.
When you say you expect a solution, do you mean for the Coyotes to stay in Glendale?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Look, there's no other alternative out there. Let's be frank about it. I don't see another city deciding. When you're looking at a fight that's already happening on the Suns, for God's sakes, over at, in downtown Phoenix, the long time, our first real professional sports team, I don't see another solution out there. The only other solution I can see is them leaving the state.
Well, Lawrence, are we seeing, though, Marcus brings up the Suns, and now with Mayor Stanton, who's been a really huge backer of the idea of refurbishing the arena or maybe even a new arena, now that he's moving on to a congressional run, does that make it even less likely for a downtown situation?
I don't think it makes it less likely. I think that it's a year of political posturing. I think that every single rational elected official in Phoenix or any municipality has to keep an open mind about what these arenas and these stadiums do bring to the quality of life and to the economic drivers of their downtown. And, you know, the Suns Arena, I remember when this was built, right? Right after Veterans Memorial Coliseum was housing them. You know, the AmeriQuest Arena really helped transform downtown. And every dollar that we've seen in downtown somehow does relate back to that. Symphony Hall can be redone with the new Suns Arena. And I actually, to disagree with Marcus for once now, I think that the Coyotes could come to downtown Phoenix. The mayor was looking at that early on. And I think that with a new arena, we might be able to incorporate a hockey team.
Do you think that's how this will ultimately end?
I do. because I think that the era of bedroom community, ideas that they can be sort of regional partners in our major teams in venues is out the door. I think downtown Phoenix has cemented itself as the leading venue for sports and entertainment in the Valley.
One thing that struck me actually watching sports last night was that Robert Sarver, when his team was playing in Phoenix last night, he was actually in Tucson watching the U of A play. So that made me feel like maybe he doesn't want to be in downtown because the partnership is so important. You have to have the owner in sync with the politicians. Are we going to see that?
Well, I mean, come on. If you talk about U of A and downtown Phoenix, half of U of A is moving into downtown Phoenix. And so maybe he's just giving the love right back.
Well, and, you know, there are a number of games that he goes to. I think taking one game off to go watch U of A is probably okay, so.
Not quite the Sean Elliott days.
I wouldn't read too much into that. But, you know, I don't think that the Coyotes will ultimately end up in downtown Phoenix because the math, there's some math problems and why that probably doesn't work out. But at the end of the day, it's still going to be up to the Coyotes to put a winning product on the ice.
Okay, are they more likely to end up in Glendale, downtown Phoenix, or Seattle?
Or Houston.
Okay.
Don't forget Houston.
And I only gave you three choices.
I know. I totally. Boy, did I just caused you a big old headache. I think ultimately, at the end of the day, I think NHL wants them to stay in Glendale. And the reason is it's one of the largest. Arizona is one of the largest media markets. And they're about to negotiate a new deal with the networks.
God, boy, do I feel like an outsider in this conversation. First Congressional District 8 and now hockey. I am from
Phoenix.
That's
something we did not grow up with.
I've never even been to a hockey game. But I do think that the economics matter, and I think downtown Phoenix has proven itself to be that generator and that uniter. I think it's coming down to the new arena.
So you're saying it's a uniter, not a divider?
Yes. Okay. Finally.
Someone once said that. I'm not sure. Lawrence Robinson, governing board member with the Roosevelt School District, and Marcus Dell'Artino, partner at First Strategic. Guys, thanks for joining us on the Newscap.
Always love to do it. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Friday Newscap from KJZZ's The Show. It's an original podcast recapping the week's big stories with experts, commentators, and reporters. You can get the full show podcast at podcast.kjzz.org. If you have any questions or comments, please email us at theshow@kjzz.org. I'm Steve Goldstein, and thanks for listening.